Jonathan Howcroft, halftime's dual international for Subway. Grab a chicken pizziola melt today.
Hello, JP.
Good afternoon.
How you doing, sir?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Good. Going well.
The chat with Brent Guerrero was fantastic.
He was good, wasn't he?
He was really good.
He was good.
And credit to him for putting himself out there. And then his interview with Mark Robinson as well. Credit to him for publicising the story. But I just feel for people that put themselves in that position, put themselves out there to be shot at, and the bravery that it takes. So credit to him.
Well, it was part of the discussion today. It was you think that people will come for you, and abandon you and leave you. But it's funny that every time people do it, they get exactly the opposite. They get great support.
And that's what you want to hear. You want to hear that human nature is empathetic enough.
Yeah.
That they understand that people have difficult times, and sharing how difficult they can be benefits everybody else.
It was a good chat. You can check it trick it down at sen.com.au if you didn't hear it, or you have someone in your life or you that's struggling with addiction. It's a shocking thing, and it's a really, really sad thing for a lot of people. It ends up in nasty places. If you want to listen to Goo's story, you can do that at the website. And more importantly, take the message from it to get help and take the responsibility to get help.
Off air, did you discuss hairdressers?
We didn't discuss hairdressers. No, we didn't.
You don't go to the same one?
No, we don't go to the same one. Well, mine's he's a very local hairdresser, mine. He lives in the bathroom. He just gets the clippers out and he just goes every couple of weeks, and that's what he does. Goose is he's looking sharp. He is very nice. Very nice man. Killing him upstairs too, they reckon. So that's good. That's good.
Good.
Got some balance in his life, which we like. We're all about balance here on Halftime.
We are. Mm. And I want to get the views, the listeners, involved this time. I realise that we've had so many interviews or topics that we've just had to fire through recently. We've not had that much talk back on this hour. So I want some listener input.
Yes, cool. I must say, before we get to that, I did tease a special guest this afternoon. We weren't able to confirm that today, which is very disappointing, but we'll track that down and make sure we get it another time on Halftime, because it's worth listening to. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. So the lead off for this is FFA, Football Federation Australia's decision to announce the other day that they are having professional referees in the A-League.
Ah, yes. The old professional referee gag.
Three of them.
Yes.
So there's five games around. Three of them, presumably each week, will have a professional referee involved. And I think it's a great idea. You can carpet it in a few different little ways, but broadly speaking, it's a positive step for football in Australia, and credit to the FFA for going ahead and doing it.
But
if you're listening, playing along at home, here comes the but.
But
it's window dressing.
It's window dressing.
It doesn't actually, it won't achieve a lot, it won't change a lot. All it will do is it will enable people like me who commentate on the football, talk about the football, it'll give us one less reason to criticise the A-League, criticise FFA about the professionalism of the game. It's just another step up for them to say, okay, here's a chufty badge. This is something else that we can do. Move on and find something else to carp about.
Yeah.
It might have a positive effect. I mean, great if it does, but that doesn't overall bother me. It's just more the fact that they've done it.
So now they can say they've done it, and we're doing everything we can.
Exactly. And top marks to them for doing it. So I want to know, what are the other examples of sporting window dressing that you know? And even more than that, what are the ones, what are the golden opportunities that sporting organisations are missing out on? What are the easy wins, the open goals that
they're not taking?
Exactly. So what, you know, the financial burden of three professional referees for the FFA, find a corporate sponsor. I mean, the various different optometrists appear on the backs of international referees and local referee competitions.
Internationally as well, the optometrists get involved.
They do.
Clever play.
So you can easily see how you'd make up the financial shortfall. So
we'll open the lines 9429 1116 with those examples.
Yes.
Of the open goals, which people don't take, sporting bodies don't take. But the ones that are taken that perhaps are a little bit outside the box, and they've got to curve and weave and duck and dip past the keeper to get through.
Well, there's an obvious one that's right in front of us, front and centre this year, which is the AFL's decision to encourage the providers of food concessions at various AFL grounds to reduce the price of basic commodities. And
listen to the way you're phrasing this.
Reintroduce kick to kick.
Put cheap food in.
After the fun. Cheap pies, chips and beer. And have kick to kick on the pitch at the end of the game. Whether that always happens, which as we've seen this season, it doesn't.
There's
reams of small print about which grounds, which products, which parts of the ground. Kick to kick won't always happen because of safety concerns and
safety concerns. Whatnot.
But just the principle of saying, okay, this is what we're doing, gives you goodwill. Whether the material benefit is significant, doesn't matter. You've got the goodwill. And I think the AFL have been able to trade off that. And Gillon McLachlan, particularly as a new chief executive, it's a step change from the old guard and says, look, this is me. I'm new. I'm listening to the fans. This is the year of the fan. And here's something to show for it.
Yeah, well, that's come under a little bit of criticism. That was widely applauded, wasn't it, when it first was announced? The cheaper food and the kick to kicks back on a Sunday afternoon at a certain given day at a certain time. Just don't go in the centre square, for God's sake. All that sort of stuff. And now there seems to have been some alterations to perhaps what was first thought to be the situation.
Well, now you've got no rounds of footy to fill up the back pages of the paper, the inside 10 or 15. You don't need to find ways of getting footy into the print, do you? So you have this idea out of season and sell it when you're trying to generate interest in the game. Once the game is generating interest of its own accord, it doesn't matter.
You don't need it anymore. No. You put the prices back up, you can jack them back up, no one will know.
Which is a conversation I had with somebody the other day about whether you would intentionally do something against your best interests at a time of strength so that you could then repeal it at a time of weakness. So, for example, if you think about where Gillon McLachlan is, he's new into the job. He's probably got a bit of a new job bounce. He could probably do something unpopular, ride it out for a couple of years, and then reverse that decision and ride a wave of popularity based on a decision that he took a couple of years beforehand, knowing that he was just saving it for a rainy day.
It's just politics 101, isn't it?
Watch too much House of Cards, I think.
Well, the other one in the AFL is the video review system, the goalpost cam.
Yes.
That's as window dressing as it gets.
Really good one. Really
because
good one.
Nothing's ever conclusive.
How are you ever going to see so many of these brushed fingers?
Nothing is ever conclusive.
Honest. unless you can see the fingernail being ripped out.
Back at 90 degrees.
Exactly.
From the finger itself.
Never gonna. Never.
Umpire's call. Confirmed behind.
Exactly. So you go through the process, and we're happy that we've gone through the process, and we've exhausted every avenue, and therefore
we've done all we can.
Yeah.
We've done all we can.
The decision that was always going to happen happens.
The old we've done all we can gag. Because the three referees, I heard about this, the professional referees, I thought that's good. It's good. But what are they going to do for the other 8 months of the year?
Well, they'll probably still have some kind of secondary employment. I think the main point about this is that they will have greater support networks around them. So they'll be, as you've seen with, I think the AFL promotes it extremely well, that you'll see their physiotherapists, their post-game reviews, their support networks to enable them to not just come straight out of the office on 5 o'clock on a Friday, straight to reffing a game at 7 o'clock Friday night. That probably has never happened, but
well, it probably has.
Not in the olden days, maybe, but you get the idea that they will have the opportunity to have time off and study and dedicate themselves to their craft.
It's getting aside a little bit, but the call for professional umpires, referees in a lot of sports is quite loud across the globe.
Yeah,
and particularly for emerging sports and sports in countries that are prominent but not massive industries, but becoming more serious because there's more coverage of them, there's more people who've got access to the information, to the viewing of those games. It's quite loud, that call, that chorus for professional referees. As a rule, do you think that there's much in professionalism for officials in games?
It's a good question to ask. For me, it's just it's really is just a PR reflection of the industry itself. So if there's money swimming around in a game, presumably the game's officials need to be part of it. If you're rejecting them, if there's an amateurism in a billion-dollar industry, then it reflects poorly on the game overall, doesn't it? I think that's my approach to it. Do I think that professional referees will make more better decisions? Maybe, maybe not. It's not something that would influence me significantly in how I appraised an individual, but it inevitably becomes the kind of thing that you refer back to as a crutch to pick on the administration.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's one side of the story before that you painted from the FFA's point of view in this case, or the AFL and the goal review or the cheaper food. We've done all we can.
Yeah.
But when it goes wrong, then there's a bad decision for the ref, a bad offside call or a bad card call or whatever it might be. Well, this bloke's professional, mate. Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword a bit too.
It is. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. But hopefully it would be, this guy's a professional, therefore that's kind of the benchmark for how difficult it is, full stop. So if this guy's dedicating all of his working week to being ready for this 90 minutes and he's still making mistakes, then that's just human nature. That's the capacity that a human has to be fallible in that situation.
Are there any cricket versions of window dressing?
There's stacks. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about window dressing for cricket to begin with was neutral umpires. But I actually thought maybe there is more of a substance to that.
I'm okay with that one.
In some areas. But
considering the stories I've heard from cricketers past.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But if you think about how the process now of listening to how third umpires make their decisions, the way we now... Is it Rod Tucker talking about rock and roll? Rock and roll the VT.
Yes. Is that who it is? Rod Tucker?
I think so. I might be wrong. Or Bruce Oxenford. Anyway.
One of them.
So going through that process, that Last Ashes series in England, when there was just chaos to do with the video review system, and it's like, oh my goodness, they've got to figure something out here. And they've achieved their goal, or largely achieved their goal, just by allowing us to listen
to the conversation.
Mm. Yeah. Rather than, you can still debate the rights and wrongs of the system and the rights and wrongs of the final decision, but hearing them go through the decision-making process is great for the
We've done all we can do, JP.
Exactly.
We've done all we can do. 26 past three on a Wednesday afternoon. JP Howcroft is with us, and just being told, the curtain raiser, you're talking about window dressing before, the curtain raiser is back this Sunday at Etihad Stadium. Did you know that? The curtain raiser is back. The Northern Blues will take on Frankston at Etihad ahead of Carlton's clash with the Gold Coast. Get along early to see two games for the price of one. Old school stuff. Curtain raisers. Is that window dressing, JP?
Curtain is window dressing.
Well, that's definitely window dressing. That's a very good point. So what about, we're sort of moving into the run home territory here with the PR spin. The Manchester City man, Melbourne City friendly game in the A-League.
Yes.
What the hell is it doing on the Gold Coast?
So the reason it's on the Gold Coast, and this is Melbourne City put out a press release a few minutes ago about this, Manchester City's involvement in the International Champions Cup at the MCG means part of the small print of that is that they can't play any other games in Melbourne. So their training camp is on the Gold Coast, which is a sensible decision considering it's their summer holidays, if you like.
Yep.
You don't want a summer holiday in Victoria when you can be on the Gold Coast.
Well, wouldn't you? Look at the weather.
Well, this is like a summer's day in Manchester. There's no doubt about that.
So is that all you get?
They'd be in shorts in this.
And when do you moved?
So they were on the Gold Coast to begin with, but the what I'd be interested to know, and at the moment I only know a couple of half stories. The idea sounds like they wanted to play a game behind closed doors, and for that game, I think the original team schedule for that was Adelaide United. That was one report that I read from coming out of the Gold Coast, but. Once word got around that Manchester City were going to play some kind of football match, enough people were like, well, presumably we'd all be stupid if we didn't try and sell tickets and open the gates rather than make it a behind closed doors friendly.
It'd be a waste.
It would. And once the wheels were in motion for that and they figured out, okay, we can pay for it, we can get a ground and what have you, I think it then became inevitable that Melbourne City would have to be the opposition. You couldn't have Manchester City playing another Australian club in Australia other than their sister franchise. So
it was odd in the first place, wasn't it? That Adelaide had been the team mooted to be playing them.
Absolutely. I mean,
considering the relationship between both teams.
Yeah, but with it being a behind closed doors thing, it can become just a logistical conversation about, okay, what's easiest for everybody? But as soon as it becomes a public match, then Melbourne City have to be the opposition, and they are.
Oh, well, just makes perfect sense.
It does.
What about the phase of, we know that obviously they're in their preparation phase as well, but what about the A-League teams? What are they up to this time of year?
That's a really good question. The big challenge at the moment is finalising their squads. And the collective bargaining agreement, which is the main sticking point for any news about Archie Thompson, that's up for renewal at the moment.
They're having a meeting today, aren't they, in Sydney? Or
yes.
Tomorrow? I heard Robson talking to KB this morning.
It's ongoing. We're expecting announcements in the next day or two.
Right.
And Ian Robson, the information that Ian Robson passed out is as close as anybody's come yet to saying they will sign off on a long service allowance outside the salary cap to enable people like Archie Thompson, who've been at one club for a long period of time, to be paid outside the cap so that they can remain with their club.
The veterans allowance.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Of course.
Now that it's got to a phase, and Robbo was on about this today, that it's a 10-year league and there are now 10-year players in that 10-year league.
Yes.
That there should be a reward and incentive for them to stay around if they're good enough.
Exactly.
And for clubs to get some concession for them to do so.
Yes. And Archie's the perfect case study for this kind of conversation as well, because on the open market, he could definitely generate more income than he would be able to get based on how Melbourne Victory are developing their squad easily. But it would be a shame to lose him to the club based on what he's given them if they can't supplement based on his long service. So I'm strongly in favour of the moves that are coming around, but the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, still hasn't been signed off. So they're unable to actually, dot the I's and cross the T's.
Well, in that regard, the players through the competition are a victim of the infancy of the competition.
Yes.
Because you don't want a veterans allowance to come in 5 years in. I mean, we're not really committed to the cause there.
No.
We're in and out.
And the volatility.
What happens?
The volatility as well. There's significant player movement across the competition. The number of stories like Archie's are rare, very rare.
Well, you talk player movement, Mark Milligan, while we're talking Melbourne Victory.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts there?
I'm disappointed. I'm never going to bear a grudge or criticise a player for making a career decision, because we're fans, we focus on football or the sport that they play. We think that that's the be-all and end-all. It's not. Life is more than that. You've got a family, you've got kids, you've got your future. But for a player at this time in his career, he was one of the best players in the Asian Cup, one of the best players in the A-League.
Yep.
He was a Premier League club tried to sign him a year ago, and you compare him to Mile Jedinak, who is not just in the Premier League, but a good player in the Premier League. I just think that he's selling himself a little bit short by taking a move to the Middle East at this stage of his career. But, he'll get a big payday.
Well, that's probably the point, isn't it? At this stage of his career, I think that's the key part of that sentence. That it's not going to go on forever for Mark Milligan. And while there is an enticing offer, wherever it may be, you've seriously got to look at that, you would think.
You would. It is disappointing, though, and a challenge for the Australian game that a marquee player, the marquee player for the Premiers, is leaving to go to what wouldn't be considered a better standard of competition. That's a question that needs to be resolved, I think.
Will this not be the lot of the A-League for quite some time until it provides itself the opportunity to remunerate players to a satisfactory level?
Yes, absolutely will. But like I say, the disappointment is that it's not a move to Europe. It's not a move. I mean, you can pick holes in some of the decisions that some of the younger players are taking, moving to some of the smaller leagues in Europe and criticising, okay, well, you're probably better off playing in Australia than be playing in Division 2 in Belgium or wherever. But for a guy of Milligan's stature to be moving to the Middle East, just, I don't know, it just sticks in the craw a little bit.
Well, that's the update in the A-League. Melbourne City taking on Manchester City on the Gold Coast. Now you know why. Doesn't seem right, but now you know why. There is, in fact, a reason for that. That Champions Cup, though, that's going to be great. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. JP Howcroft is with us. You can track him down on Twitter if you like, at JP Howcroft. Funnily enough, it's pretty straightforward. JP Howcroft on Twitter, and you can engage with the great man that way if you like. But he's with us every Wednesday on the program from 3 till 4. And, of course, being a dual international, he's got a foot in both camps of the Ashes coming up July 8. We're at Cardiff. What's it called? Something Sophia Gardens?
Yes.
In Cardiff for the first test.
Swalek Stadium, I think.
Oh, has it got a name, is it?
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't on the memo that I read.
Do you not buy Swalek by the dozen?
I haven't bought a Swalek today. What? What's a Swalek, JP?
It would be a guess. I'm guessing it's South Wales Electricity.
There you go.
Swalek.
Swalek. Renewable electricity and gas supplier for Wales.
There you go.
Look at you.
There you go. I'll have a cheeky pint of those, please.
I'll have one in large, thanks. maybe medium if I'm trimming down. But yes, give me two mediums in the red and the blue. And I'll have two Swalex to myself. That'll be great. So Swalex Stadium is hosting the first Ashes test. And gee whiz, is there a build-up over there?
Is there?
No. Nah.
It feels a bit muted, doesn't it?
We're making stuff up at the moment.
We're absolutely right. And it's the worst, always the worst time of an Ashes tour for me. Because people are just so desperate to get their teeth into something. Yeah. They'll get their teeth into anything. And Graham Swan just
Swanny
sniping from... I mean, he's a professional sniper now. That's his role.
He's been doing that for a while, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, he has. Jason Gillespie with a reasonably innocuous statement. And of course, everyone jumps on it and mines it for all that they can.
Yeah.
Culminating in Michael Clarke announcing his tour squad to Australia House, I think it was two nights ago.
It was.
In a very embarrassing, for mine, display of attempted humour.
Yeah, not fantastic. It was the Dad's Army sort of theme he was running with.
Yeah.
Trying to work out the nicknames and the new gags with that sort of stuff.
It was David Brent light, wasn't it?
He didn't put too much time and effort into it. No. Which was slightly disappointing.
No.
I would have liked him to have had a real good crack at it and nailed it. Or at least gone down swinging.
There's material. There's, you know, it's the kind of thing if you got a writer involved, if there's there's plenty of Australian comedians in London, you could have got a kind of a correspondence dinner type approach.
Yeah.
Be presidential and...
Could have done anything with it.
Yeah.
But we are making stuff up. Nicknames, it's Dad's Army, now it's Chris Rogers. Yeah, poor old Chris Rogers. Chris. If you haven't caught up with this story today, we've been alerted to this, that he's in a business with another batsman.
He's a tout. Tell it as it is.
He's a batsman?
He's a tout.
He's not...
He's a scalper.
Poor old Chris Rogers is just copying it from you guys.
They should send him home. They should deport him.
He was trying to package up some tickets for the Lord's Test, was it?
Yes.
The first test.
Yeah.
The Lord's Test, test number two, and with a bit of corporate stuff, and then meet the Australian team.
Yes. Yeah.
And a little business he's got on the side, which is all above board, and they've done this sort of stuff before.
Yes.
Not clearly to the Ashes or the Lord's Test match.
No, it sounds like that they received the tickets through his Middlesex contacts where he was club captain.
Yep.
It sounds like they received more than they probably should have, and they were in his possession, perhaps without the full understanding of why, what he was then going to do with them. Rather than just go to family and friends, the idea was that they would become tickets as the centrepiece of a money-making scheme as part of corporate
business venture.
Yes, and his partner in crime...
Tom Scolle.
Yes. He doesn't...
Former Middlesex batsman.
He doesn't sound like he's the sharpest tool in the box.
So they tried to sell him for this package for $5,900.
Yeah.
Or £2,900, I think it was. £2,900. So what's happened? The Lords, the MCC has come out and said, we're not dealing in the secondary market. You can't have this. You can't do that. Chris Rogers has said, oh, sorry, didn't know. Yes. No worries. Happy to take him out.
Yeah.
Not a problem. But the Daily Telegraph Sport over there in England, on the back page, have got this big picture of Chris Rogers walking off the field with his bat in the air after a fine innings for Australia, and just says, banned, on the bottom of it. So poor old Chris Rogers, just trying to do some business outside of cricket,
hard
and you blokes have just put him on the back page.
We're principled. We've got morals. we don't do things like that.
You are kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
You are kidding.
So it's rubbish. That's really what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
We're in a tailspin of nothing publicity, just to get us to think about the Ashes or talk about the Ashes, when the real story is England's one-day international form, not because of the players involved, because the crossover between
it's
the
three or four in the squad,
yeah,
the
it's not significant, but the vibe, the Dennis Danuto vibe about it is a complete sea change in how England have approached cricket over the past 4 or 5 years, maybe since as far back as that 05 series where they broke the shackles with Triscothic off the top and a wide variety of pace bowlers with Andrew Flint off as the jewel in the crown. This is the approach by Paul Farbrace, who's done it on the say-so of Trevor Bayliss, has completely changed how they relate to the fans, how they play their cricket, the kind of players that they're selecting. So I think if they're able to take that into the Test series, it will be a very different England than we've seen previously. And what comes with that is the unknown. We don't know if that will improve players' behaviour, whether it means that they'll just get carried away and burn themselves out quickly or what. But it makes for a much more interesting approach from an English point of view than I would have said 2 or 3 weeks ago.
So you're suggesting that now, with the state of the one-day team and the different vibe that Mr. Fabrice has injected into the team on the back of what Trevor Bayliss wants him to do, the whole dynamic of the series has shifted.
From an English perspective, Australia are still the better team. They still have better players. They're in better form. They should win.
Yeah.
So it would take something dramatic for Australia not to win. England can't manipulate anything in their favour, but they have some momentum, and we know that when you get not that the England grounds are necessarily that big, particularly compared to Australia, but there's an English supporter culture which can get behind the team and generate an energy which we've seen in our 5 and our 9 as. Can steamroll a through team. So if James Anderson gets on a roll or Ben Stokes gets on a roll, it could influence the dynamic of it. But they still have to play better Test cricket than Australia, which won't be easy,
but we are very, very keen to see if it can happen at some stage through the series. And if you're ever a chance, the first Test on a slightly dull Cardiff pitch might give you some confidence anyway, not being routed by the ever all-conquering Aussies. Dominant over the Windies, you know. Dominant. You know that, don't you?
Oh, I do.
Dominant.
I watched...
You struggled against the Windies. You know that, don't you?
Every sleepless night's worth of ball.
You did too. Are you doing that again for the Ashes?
Yeah, probably. Probably. Oh, White Line Wireless.
JP Howcraft is with us on a Wednesday afternoon. JP, is there a logo for the English cricket team? Is there a mascot? Is there a something?
There's an Ashes mascot going around this year.
What's it look like?
At the ground. It looks like the urn in kind of foam. I think it's called Ernie as well.
Is it?
I think so.
Ernie. I haven't seen Ernie's work. I'm just trying to track him down on the Google-ometer here and haven't been quite able to do so.
But I presume there'd be a lion. Normally they're called Rory, aren't they? Lion yeah. Mascots.
Well, you're lucky you're not the England Thistles.
Are you making reference to Partick Thistle FC?
I'm looking at Partick Thistle FC's mascot.
It's brilliant.
Scottish Soccer Club.
Yeah, if you've not seen it, Google, get on whatever platform you use and find Partick Thistle FC's new mascot.
What the hell is going on?
It is like a David Lynch nightmare scene.
It's some bloke... I don't know the colour. It's a black and white photo in front of me, but I'm going to Google it.
It's yellow. It's vivid yellow.
Is it?
Yes. So it's if you imagine...
Tracky pants. Looks like he's just in tracky pants.
If you imagine Maggie from The Simpsons, you know Maggie's nemesis baby with the monobrow?
Yeah, with the monobrow.
It's like a mashup of their heads on the body of a guy wearing yellow... Tracky pants
with yellow gloves,
with an expression on the face of the mascot as well. They've got eyes but no eyeballs, and an open mouth that just looks like all the horror of Hades is spewing out of it.
With three teeth,
it is just grotesque.
Now,
utterly grotesque.
If you are to have a club or a sporting team nicknamed the Thistles,
yes.
Where do you go with your mascot, though?
Well,
it does sort of look thistly.
It definitely doesn't look like something you want to stand on.
Do you avoid the mascot if you named the Thistles?
It's
you just get a flag instead, maybe.
It's the challenge of raising awareness, isn't it? So we're talking about Partick Thistle on Melbourne Radio. The amount of traffic that will be generated through Partick Thistle's website, through their social media channels, it's achieved its aim. I mean, they look stupid in the process, but they've achieved their aim of raising awareness about their football club.
Now, I don't think I'm going to continue to follow my good friends at Partick, though, on the back of this. They will have raised certain awareness, and there'll be a lot more people aware of it now than were before they were listening this afternoon. But the thing that gets me is it's the brand new mascot. Like, they've actually gone to some effort released it this week.
Yes.
And it's still horrific.
And it's designed by a notable artist as well. So this hasn't just been
problem.
Knocked up by a kid with an Etch-a-Sketch and some Crayolas.
I reckon they should do right now at Partick is call that kid with the Etch-a-Sketch and get another one.
Mean.
Get another one.